Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. Our first item of business today is a roll call to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle. Representative Petersburg.
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson.
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson.
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson.
Present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West.
West, present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Mason, present.
Representative Mason, present. Representative
Mason is present. Yeah, thank you. Okay, thank you, members. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from March 25th. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the adoption of the minutes of March 25th.
The motion is on the table, members, for approval of the minutes. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. So members, this is our last meeting before break, and it is a bit of a milestone that's kind of we transition from hearing a lot of individual bills into putting together our omnibus bill and hearing that the week after break. Representative Petersburg had suggested that House Nonpartisan Research kind of go through the process moving forward, and particularly the general fund and how it relates to some of the broader issues that the in the budget that we're dealing with at this moment. We're going to do that, Representative Petersburg, but once we get through the bills. I just wanted to let you know we haven't forgotten your request, and it is on the agenda. We originally had 8 bills. Now we're down to 7, and we do have till 4:30. I highly doubt we would need to go that late, but I wanted to make sure that we left enough time for the bills today, because this is really the last day for us to hear bills in this fashion. We'll, of course, hear everybody's ideas via amendment next, or the week after next, but in terms of formal bill hearings, this is really the last one before our omnibus bill. So we do have our first bill on the agenda for today, and again, as we have all week, these bills are being heard on an informational basis. We're not moving them out of committee, we're not laying them over, we're just hearing them as information. And I will say that very helpful. I already know that there's a couple of bills I had yesterday that I'm going to be revising based on some committee discussion and public input. So these meetings, although they're informational, are very helpful and important. So with that, we have our first item of business is the forecasting for Metro Mobility program costs. And Representative Richardson, this is your bill. Please proceed with your testimony and the testimony of the community presenters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the bill draft before you would require forecasting of the Metro Mobility Program As many of you know, Metro Mobility is one of the mandated systems of paratransit in the state and serves customers with a certified disability. The service is critical for those with disabilities who rely on it. And this bill is based on a recommendation from the Governor's Blue Ribbon Committee on the Metropolitan Council's structure and services, which put forth a recommendation that the legislature should statutorily shift the Metro Mobility budget from a base general fund appropriation to a forecasted budget program, ensuring that we are basing those costs on demand. And that would also ensure that the growing demand for the mandated Metro Mobility services is addressed so that we can continue to meet the needs of individuals with disabilities, and also ensuring that we don't have budget shortfalls for general transit services. Today, Mr. Chair, I have with me a few testifiers in support of the draft bill language, including Dakota County Commissioner Holberg, Jillian Nelson with the Autism Society, Sarah Messel with Proof, and the department is also standing by for questions.
Thank you so much, Representative Richardson. We'll hear from the testifiers, and then we'll have committee questions of both the author and the testifiers at that point. So I think we'll have maybe the order that you had mentioned. Commissioner Holberg can go first. And welcome back to your committee. I'm saying that, Commissioner Holberg, as you chaired this committee in 2005 and 2006, I was a member at that time. And as many of you know, Commissioner Holberg had a very long and wonderful history in the Minnesota House of Representatives, I believe. First elected in 1998, am I remembering that correctly? And then served until 2014, and also chaired the Ways and Means Committee in 2011 and 2012. So she knows about forecasted budgets, that's for sure. So wonderful to see you again, Commissioner, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and seems like old home week in some ways, given I spent 14 years on the Transportation Finance Committee and have been very involved in a transportation issue. I won't tell you for how many decades now. So I'm here today not as a county commissioner. I need to start up front with that disclaimer. My words today are presenting recommendations of the Blue Ribbon Task Force and not that of the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. So Governor Walz in August of 2020 put together a Blue Ribbon Committee to look at three items relative to the Metropolitan Council. He tasked this group with looking at the role of elected versus appointed Met Council members, the Metropolitan Council's role as a metropolitan planning organization, and the effectiveness of the delivery of the regional transit service. This group was a group of former chairs of Met Council, former MnDOT staff, leaders from the business and academic world, mayors and county commissioners. And we met over a period of 3 months, had 7 meetings, produced a report in excess of 300 pages, looking at a variety of these issues, and we heard testimony from various levels of government, League of League of Women Voters, a number of groups with interest in governance in the metropolitan area. One of the recommendations under the effectiveness of the regional transit service is what is reflected in this bill, in that the Metro Mobility Service be a forecasted program for all of you who have been finance chairs in the legislature. You're highly familiar with the process of getting a target or a spending target for general fund dollars in the course of putting together a statewide budget. And given that this service is federally mandated, there is no choice in whether or not we do provide this service. And in fact, much of the corollary to this service in greater Minnesota is forecasted and accounted for in the Health and Human Services budget. It gets very challenging when this particular service is growing at about 10% a year in large part to the silver tsunami that we're facing. And then we have other elements of unaccounted for needs in the budget, and it leaves very little room for general fund dollars to meet non-mandated programming, if you will. And so the opportunity, for a long time, I've thought that this made a lot of sense. And in the last legislative session, we were able to segment the budget of Metro Transit as a separate line item within the transportation finance budget, which was in itself a huge first step. Because what happens is when the Metro Mobility budget is a major Pac-Man, it just consumes all the funding within Metro Transit. And unfortunately, about the only place that Metro Transit has to make cuts or make allowances for those increased costs of Metro Mobility is to constrain growth or services in what I refer to as the bread and butter of the system, that being the regular route bus service, and that's under a lot of pressure as well for funding. So the ability to take this now as a separate line item, and because there is no choice as far as funding it and putting it in as a forecasted program, it doesn't mean that in the end, in the final budget, that they will get the exact dollar amount that was forecasted as a need, but it takes it away from the budget setting process of getting targets in various committees, and at least illustrates what portion of that budget is mandated and it must be funded. And I think it just provides a more realistic picture of what the transit needs are as a component of the transportation finance bill. And allows, in particular, chairs of the Transportation Finance Committee to go into that budget target setting process with a more informed story to show how much of the spending is, in fact, necessary just to uphold this federally mandated service.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. And Representative Petersburg, I see your hand is up, but we'll get through. There's just two other testifiers, and then we'll have we'll open it up for questions. Next on my list is Sarah Messelt. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, from the Proof Alliance.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the
committee. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Messelt, and I'm the Executive Director of Proof Alliance. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today about the importance of Metro Mobility sustainability. For over two decades, Proof Alliance has been committed to preventing FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, in Minnesota, and supporting all people impacted. We work across the state providing screening, diagnosis, educating professionals, providing support and outreach to families impacted by FASD, and working with communities to make sure that people with FASD can thrive in their communities. While some people think that FASD is rare, we know now that as many as 1 in 20 people have an FASD. And while it has not been highly understood in the larger community and even in the disability community, FASD refers to that range of conditions, including birth defects, brain injury, physical, behavioral, and intellectual disabilities. These conditions are lifelong and irreversible. But people with an FASD can lead productive, engaged, and meaningful lives if the communities they live in and the places they work and the systems that support them understand what accommodations are needed for living to their full potential. So research shows that when people with an FASD have consistent, dependable supports in all parts of their lives, including housing and employment, social activities, and transportation, they can fully participate in their communities, maintain their homes, jobs, and be taxpayers. Access to dependable, convenient transportation is essential in this equation. That is why we strongly support this legislation to create sustainability in this way for Metro Mobility. Many people with disabilities, including people with an FASD, depend on this service to get to their job, participate in their community, further their education. It's important to note with our specific population with FASD, often results in a brain injury. There's impulse control and poor decision-making. So people with FASD specifically rely on public transportation because they do not receive driver's licenses, and Metro Mobility. So having consistent, dependable transportation is directly linked to their quality of life and their ability to work and play in their communities. Metro Mobility has truly been a lifeline for people with disabilities, and we're grateful at Proof Alliance and thankful to Representative Richardson to have this opportunity to speak out in support of this effort. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Messel. Our next testifier is Jillian Nelson from the Autism Society of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Nelson. Please state your name for the record. Welcome back to the committee also. We heard from you,
Thank you, earlier,
which was wonderful, and welcome back. You can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Horstein and committee members. My name is Jillian Nelson, and I'm the Community Resource and Policy Advocate for the Autism Society of Minnesota. Part of my role is running our information and resource hotline and speaking with families and people with autism throughout the entire state. Over and over, I hear how vital transportation is for existence. And while many people with autism do drive, for those who don't and who have sensory or safety challenges that make traditional transit inaccessible, Metro Mobility is a lifeline. Metro Mobility allows people to attend medical appointments, community events, connect with friends and family, run errands. It allows people with disabilities to stay connected to their community independently. In 2012, the state of Minnesota agreed to establish an Olmstead plan as part of the settlement of a lawsuit known as Jensen versus Minnesota Department of Human Services. The Minnesota Olmstead plan was approved in September 2015 by federal court. The vision of the plan is that people with disabilities are living, learning, working, and enjoying life in the most inclusive setting. The Olmstead Plan does not apply only to services offered through Minnesota Department of Human Services, but rather it's a comprehensive plan that applies to all Minnesota government agencies and the services they provide. I think we can all agree that being able to navigate public transportation in an accessible manner on our own is in fact the most inclusive. Without this valuable program, people with disabilities are dependent on staff and family members for transportation, and in many cases, a physical disability that requires someone who has access to a specialized vehicle. This dependence restricts freedom and independence. We're asking today for you to support funding forecasting for Metro Mobility so that funding can be based on the needs of this community, the need for independence, the need for inclusion, instead of on an arbitrary number that fits into a budget plan. I can tell you as an autistic person, when you live with a disability, every part of your life is meticulously planned to assure accessibility. And we're asking that the state step forward and join us in planning and forward thinking in forecasting the needs of this community to assure continued access to accessibility and necessary transportation for all members of the disability community is consistently available and we can continue growing. Thank you for your support and forecasting of Metro Mobility, and I yield my time today.
Thank you so much. Ms. Nelson, and thank you for all of your advocacy. I know that you had come with other advocates earlier this session, and you know this bill is an example of something very specific that we can do to address some of the issues that you raised. So I appreciate your testimony. Now, members, we can turn to member questions, and I'll take these in order of the hands that I saw raised. First, we'll have Representative Petersburg, then Representative Torkelson, and then Representative Elkins, and then any others. So you can address your questions either to any of the testifiers or the author. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question is actually a request for, I guess, an opinion from Commissioner Holberg. First of all, I want to start out by saying I don't think anybody on this committee disregards the importance of Metro Mobility. And we know that it's a federal mandated program as well, and it's a program that I think has been very effective. And I agree with the commissioner that this makes sense. It's made sense to me when we talked about it before. The question that I have is sometimes when things get put more on autopilot, which this would then be, it sometimes allows us to be a little bit lax in looking at ways of improving. And so I'm wondering if the commissioner has any opinion on whether or not that may be the fact here and what we can do to maintain still our ability and need to continually improve the program.
Commissioner Hallberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg. I agree that that is a potential downside of a forecasted program, but it's, you know, the job of the committees to review all the spending through their divisions and look for efficiencies. And I think that you can always look for better ways to do things. And I can, for example, share in Dakota County, we have a national award-winning program where we offer accounts where Lyft can be used by the disability community for rides at a fraction of the cost of what a Metro Mobility ride would be. It's amazingly successful and has changed the lives of individuals and their families, both in their work and social life. So, you know, it would be up to the committee to do that evaluation and keep looking for efficiencies. But for the health of the transportation sector as a whole, as it competes for general fund dollars against a statewide budget, to have this particular component, very large part of the budget, at least forecasted as a need, I think will benefit transportation funding, you know, across the whole spectrum, from roads to transit, ports, et cetera. I think the benefit outweighs that caveat.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Petersburg, did you have a follow-up?
Just in comment that, yeah, I think you're right. It does outweigh it. My concern, just as that the Met Council, which oversees this, is one more level beyond our oversight directly through the department, and so it just makes it a little bit more difficult to oversee that specifically once it becomes forecasted. But I agree with you. I think it's something that we need to at least consider. So thank you for your opinion.
Well, and Mr. Chair, if I might.
Commissioner.
If you look at the language presented, there's some really nice evaluative components or data components that my council will be required to include as a part of the forecasting. That'll be a good first step for that evaluation process.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Commissioner Hallberg, for pointing that out. I agree on that. Okay, our next question comes from Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I may have jumped the line because I believe that Representative Elkins probably had his hand up first, but I think we're about the same age and both over 65, so I guess we're probably okay with that.
Well, Representative Torkelson, you served in the legislature just a tad longer. So.
Well, there is that. It's great to see you. My question is for Representative, or is it Commissioner Hallberg? I never know which title to use first. But if I may ask her a question, Mr. Chair.
You can proceed, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. It's very good to see you, Commissioner Hallberg. We miss you here at the legislature, but we do get to see you every once in a while. You mentioned in your testimony the fact that rural services of this nature are part of the DHS budget. Did the study group give any consideration to recommending that this actually be shifted over to DHS?
Commissioner Hallberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson. We did have a presentation, and it was very clear that it was a pretty deep morass to try and sort out medical versus, you know, social uses, completely different structures. It was more than what a Blue Ribbon Task Force meeting a handful of times was willing and able to dig into. But this forecasting as a first step seemed to make a lot of sense. But the greater Minnesota model involves everything from cab rides to transportation providers. It's just really a much different structure.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that answer, Commissioner. On a different note, you also mentioned efficiency in your remarks. Did you look at any possibilities for making Metro Mobility a much more efficient, or even a little bit more efficient service.
So part of our I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, my apologies.
No problem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, we did recommend a number of efficiencies, not so targeted to Metro Transit, but one of the things that we really struggled with is efficiencies in the transit system as a whole, and the whole issue of opt-outs and Metro Transit. And one of the things that we identified is that there needed to be an independent evaluation, recognizing the inherent conflict with Metro Transit being the funder and competitor of opt-outs, and kind of how the mishmash of that. And what we realized is that we don't even have good comparative data sets to begin to compare efficiencies. And so hopefully, and I've had a conversation with a couple individuals about this issue, is the task force recommended an independent evaluation of this issue. But prior to being able to do that, there has to be some discussion or constraints or identifying similar data sets in how they report. And so as a first step, I would urge the legislature to look at opportunities for putting forth evaluative tools, and this could also apply to Greater Minnesota Transit, but that there would be a series of data sets so that you could compare apples to apples across various systems for costs of delivering service, et cetera. And at this point, we don't even have that. So I think it gets really hard to evaluate efficiencies when we don't even have any common data sets to evaluate.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions, Representative Torkelson?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll let it go at that. Thank you, Commissioner Holberg.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Elkins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And less questions than just building upon what Commissioner Holberg said. Of course, I agree with what she said 100% of the time. And just like to add that during my 8 years on the Metropolitan Council, the efficient operation of Metro Mobility was a constant topic of discussion and evaluation. They do, you know, Metro Transit, Metro Transit's Met Council, but they do use optimization models for scheduling, for example, to optimize the route efficiency. A lot of the inefficiencies really have been related to staff turnover at the rates of pay that the drivers for Metro Mobility earn. There's been a lot of turnover. At one point, the council had to mandate that their contract providers increase the wages of the drivers and provide them with the money they needed to do it, just to reduce the amount of turnover in the driver ranks. So. And I wanted to thank Representative Richardson for bringing this forward. This is an important topic, and would like to thank Commissioner Holberg for her testimony today. It's amazing. So, this is a really good bill, and I hope we include it in our omnibus.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Are there any other questions or comments from committee members? I'll turn it over to Representative Richardson for the last word.
Thank you, Mr.
You can proceed. But before you go, Representative Richardson, I want to echo Representative Elkins and thanking you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this forward. I know this is a set of issues you've worked on a lot over the years, even before you came to the legislature. So you've brought a critical issue to our attention, as has Commissioner Holberg. Commissioner Holberg, I see your hand up. Do you want to make a comment?
Real briefly, I also would like to thank Representative Richardson for working on this issue. And with a little indulgence, I first met Chair Hornstein when he was on the Met Council. But when he was a freshman, he and I sat together side by side in the local government committee. And we had a notebook of notable quotables, and we'd write down memorable or not so smart things that came out of the mouths of our fellow legislators. And we'd look back on them and laugh. And I kept that notebook for years. But if you decide to pass this piece of legislation, you'll actually be proving former Representative Kahn wrong, because one of the notable quotables.
I know where you're going, Commissioner.
Yeah. One of the notable quotables in our notebook from that time was Representative Kahn said she never saw anything good come out of a blue ribbon task force.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yes, exactly. I think it was like a blue ribbon commission guarantees nothing will happen.
Right.
So we would be really plowing new ground, both for very good fiscal and social policy here, but really making, maybe this could be history, a blue ribbon commission recommendation actually coming to fruition. Representative Nelson, you will get the last word, Representative Richardson, I guarantee it. Representative Nelson.
I just hope that I'm not in your book of notable quotables, Representative Holberg, and glad to see you again.
Okay, well, great. Well, Representative Richardson, again, with my thanks, if you have some ingratitude with some closing comments, and then we'll move on. Thank you, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to thank Commissioner Holberg as well for the work that she has done on the Blue Ribbon Commission, and the fact that there is some good things that have come out of Blue Ribbon Commissions as well. And also thank you to Jillian Nelson and Sarah Masselt as well for being able to bring the perspective of individuals who rely on Metro Mobility as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. And so this bill is under consideration for inclusion in our omnibus. And good to see you again, Commissioner Holberg, and to Ms. Nelson. I see you're still on the call, and Ms. Masselt, thank you so much for your testimony. Okay, members, we will move on to our next bill. And I think that is a bill that I am going to present, because our vice chair is at a different meeting now. So I'm going to put forward House File 2337. And this is a bill that was brought to my attention from a call I received last year from Mr. Bruce Karstedt, who's the Honorary Consul General of Sweden and the President of the Minnesota Consular Corps. And members, I didn't know that we have, and maybe Mr. Karstedt can give the exact number, but you know, couple dozen perhaps honorary consuls or more in the state of Minnesota. A very wide range of countries have representation here. I was very impressed with that. And this has to do with their special plates. And these aren't the typical special plates members that we normally hear. It's about identification plates for these honorary consuls. And Mr. Karstedt will talk about the need that's being filled and why this legislation is before us. So, Mr. Karstedt, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's an honor to be with you today. My name is Bruce Karstedt. My profession since 1990 has been the president and CEO of the American Swedish Institute, but I've also been serving for 25 years as the Honorary Consul General for Sweden, and today I come to you as the president of the Minnesota Consular Corps. The Minnesota Consular Corps is a professional organization which is comprised of individuals who are heads of the consular offices of 31 different countries here in the state of Minnesota. Of those 31 countries, four are represented by career service officers: Canada, Mexico, Ecuador, and Ethiopia. And the rest are comprised of individuals who work in other fields like me, but who volunteer their time to serve in an honorary consular capacity. These consuls have and consider it a real privilege to represent these 31 countries in a state like Minnesota, which is recognized as a globally minded state with a broad international reach in all sorts of areas: trade, commerce, education, and the like. Of course, their portfolio at its core includes serving citizens of their countries who've established residence in Minnesota and need help with consular matters like passports and voting and other moments of interface with local authorities. But we also work closely with the Minnesota Trade Office and many local and foreign chambers of commerce as well as educational institutions with exchange programs with students from around the world. Many of our consuls work closely with Global Minnesota in developing programs and initiatives and engage the community in the international sphere. And quite a few of us have represent countries which have sister city relationships with other cities throughout the state of Minnesota, which result in collaborative efforts that uplift the importance of these citizen-to-citizen relationships. With that as background, as Mr. Chair has articulated, I'm here because of this bill, which is in front of you, HF 2337. By way of explanation, for many years, special license plates had been issued to individuals who serve as honorary consuls in this state. However, in early 2020, the Office of Driver and Vehicle Services in the Minnesota Department of Public Safety had reached a determination that there was really actually no legislative authority for the state to issue these honorary consulate license plates. As a result, they concluded, and I think it was an absolutely perfect, proper conclusion, that they needed to immediately recall these licenses until the legislative authority was again granted. And so that's the purpose of the bill, to give authority to the appropriate state agencies to again issue these license plates to Minnesota's 31. And sometimes that varies depending upon countries adding consular representation here to these honorary consuls serving in Minnesota. We think that there is great symbolic importance to the state in recognizing the presence of consuls who represent different countries here. They're a public representation of Minnesota's links to the international community, and I think they recognize the role, the valuable role these consuls play in connecting Minnesota with the rest of the world. And we would be grateful for the passage of this bill and for its referral to the Senate for subsequent action. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Karstad. Are there any questions for Mr. Karstad? Okay, I'm scanning the squares here. I don't see anything, anyone. So thank you for your testimony, Mr. Karstad, and members will Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You asking about that, is it time to talk about the bill itself?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So I think that the value of the bill is valuable, and I think it's time we should, certainly we could do that. But to you, Mr. Chair, I would just say that a while ago I asked about how many of these plates were out there, and nonpartisan staff, Mr. Lee, gave me the printout. It was 15 pages long. Of that, there were over 20 that were less than 20 have been issued throughout the state of Minnesota. So I'm just saying, Mr. Chair, maybe sometime we should look into whether or not we reevaluate whether or not all of them need to stay in place off into the future. It's just a future piece because this brings up the question. So just passing it on for food for thought.
No, I appreciate that, and I don't know if it was Representative Hausman, but somebody recently did talk about our former colleague and friend, Representative Leader, was not, I think, would have echoed your concerns, Representative Petersburg. Representative Mason, I see your hand is up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question, the fact that the plates are given to them. Now, is that something that they pay for, or are we doing this just as a special recognition of their the position that they hold?
It's a good point, Representative Mason. It works a little differently than our traditional special plates. Maybe Mr. Burris could explain the difference.
My understanding, we pay.
Mr. Karstad looks like he's going to explain the difference.
Oh, okay. Sorry. You said my name and I'll
Oh, no. Mr. Burris.
I'll be glad to turn off. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Burris, if I said Mr. Karstad, I'm sorry. I meant Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, this would carry the same fee structure that's in place for other special plates. So there is a plate fee. That is imposed for special plates that is at a couple of different, the fee is set to change in the future, but it's the same fee amount across the various types, and this would be added this would carry that same fee. However, the difference is really rests on the eligibility for the plate for a number of special plates. You know, anyone who's interested, who's owner of an eligible vehicle, could obtain the plate. This has an added requirement of being recognized as an honorary consular official in order to get the plate.
Okay, and I have never seen one of these plates. So is it just a general plate that says consular on it, rather than identifying the particular country?
Well, thanks, Representative Mason. Now, Mr. Karstad, I think that is a question for you. Mr. Karstad.
They look, by all purposes, as all other Minnesota license plates, but there is the recognition is that you use the country's Olympic code plus a number on the plate. So the license plate for me, the Consul of Sweden, was SWE1. And then there was a small circle with the letter CC for Consular Corps. That's the way it's recognized.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Excellent question, Representative Mason. I think it's important that we get a visual of what we're talking about here. Okay, members, are there any other questions about this House file? If not, we can move on. Members, this is, again, House File 2337, which we'll consider for inclusion in the omnibus. The next bill on the agenda is from Representative Petersburg, House File 1692. Driver's license knowledge testing online proctoring requirements. Thank you for bringing this to our attention, Representative Petersburg. Welcome. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill has been around since beginning of session. When I think it was highlighted in just last week's report from the OLA on examinations stations, changes in one of the recommendations, and I want to read it. It says, if the legislature chooses to allow at-home knowledge testing, it may also wish to specify who is eligible to serve as a proctor. Because right now it's silent and there really is no control over that. And the concern rests around whether or not we have people proctoring it or overseeing the examination itself to make sure that it's unbiased. I think all of us agree that we want to have drivers out there that are competent, understand the rules of the road, understand how to drive. And I'm hearing anecdotal, at least, observations that maybe some of the online testing isn't necessarily being done what we would consider effectively. As an example, I heard one in which a gentleman took the test before in person three times, couldn't get over 50%, then went home and took it online and got 100%. And so the question becomes, are we making sure that the testing is accurate? And what this bill does is it just specifies what the department would follow in regard to proctoring is. So it would be, it'd have to be physically present at the location where it's testing, and the proctor must not be a relative. It must be an employee of the driver education program, authorized entity, a school, charter school, or a state or local government. It's just to make sure that we have confidence and validity to the testing. And Mr. Chair, in a nutshell, that is the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Petersburg. And I think it's always helpful, seems like the last couple of days we're taking seriously some reports that have come out of different agencies. Yours is the legislative auditor, Representative Richardson, the Blue Ribbon Commission. I took a few recommendations yesterday from MnDOT. So I think it's important some of these reports are written and then they kind of collect dust on a shelf somewhere. And I think it is really important that we read these and act on recommendations. That's what you're doing, Representative Petersburg, and I think that's appreciated. Are there questions of the author? Or any further discussion? Okay, I think we can move on. Let's see. I'm going to just again say that House File 1692 has been heard and will be considered in our omnibus bill. Thank you, members. We're ahead of schedule. And our next bill is House File 273 from Representative Elkins. And this bill is related to development of a statewide freight network optimizational tool. And Representative Elkins, I know you have a few testifiers, but why don't you give us a little overview of the bill, and then we'll take the testimony and have our discussion. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you opened it quite nicely, and I think I'm going to turn it over directly. I think Mr. Bentley Graves from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce would like to say a few words to kick this off before we turn it over to the other testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Mr. Graves, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Mr. Graves with us?
Mr. Graves just joined, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Graves, I don't know if you heard, we're a little ahead of schedule, so we're up next on the freight optimization bill, and Representative Elkins would like you to proceed with testimony if you're on the line, Mr. Graves.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. I had some technical difficulties there. Can you hear me and see me?
We can hear you and see you. So thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the committee.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee, and Representative Elkins for considering this bill today. This is a bill that we've worked on for the last couple of years, and it's of significant interest to our members. The idea of leveraging freight optimization for two reasons. One, from a economic development standpoint, this is something that a number of other states have done to really help businesses understand the opportunities to either locate in Minnesota or grow in Minnesota. By leveraging the supply chain opportunities that might be available to them is something, like I said, that a number of other states have done and that we think there's great potential to do here in Minnesota as well. And similarly, to add another tool to the toolbox for MnDOT in looking out across the landscape of the state and trying to determine where to get kind of the best bang for the buck, the best return on investment for investments in our public infrastructure as it relates to the movement of freight around the state. And I know we have Mr. Langer here and Lee Munich from the U to talk a good bit more about freight optimization specifically, but I just wanted to add our thoughts and our support. Mm-hmm. Our thanks to the committee and Representative Elkins in particular for bringing this forth. So thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies for bungling the technology here.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Our next testifier is... hold on a second.
Rick Langer
from Quetica.
Chairman Hornstein and members of the committee, this is Mark Barron from Quetica. Unfortunately, Rick was called away at the last minute. So if it's okay,
absolutely. Absolutely. I had your name on here is either Rick or Mark from Quetica. So welcome, and please state your name for the record.
All right, thank you. My name is Mark Barron. I'm with Quetica. We are a Bloomington-based service-disabled veteran-owned small business who specializes in the development of the sorts of models under consideration here. We started out as a supply chain consulting firm back in the 90s and have built models like this for companies like Cargill, for instance, who use one of our tools to continually assess their worldwide supply chain. We've done work for Amazon, Walmart, and a variety of others. And back in 2014, our company president, Rick Langer, was making a presentation on some work we had done for the Department of Defense, looking at some overseas supply chains to support troops in Afghanistan. And a state DOT secretary at the time approached Rick and asked if we could do something similar in a private sector setting. So since that time, we've done models for Iowa, Nebraska. We're currently developing a model for Florida. And we've also started applying optimization modeling techniques to other problems beyond freight networks. We're currently doing a snowplow route optimization for the state of South Dakota. We've looked at truck parking for the state of Texas. Very quickly, route or optimization models are really data-driven techniques for trying to find the best answer based on data. I was with the state of Minnesota for 20 years, and I often likened it to when I was working at MnDOT back in the 1980s and 90s, performance management was introduced, and it was a new concept coming out of the business world that government was being asked to adopt. And so as we've started doing optimization in the public sector, we've seen many opportunities for this sort of application. There's been a number of states recently that have asked about transit route optimization. We're looking at, as we convert to an electric vehicle fleet, where do you put the electric charging stations? All these are sorts of questions that can be answered using this sort of model. So the proposal that's before the committee would look at developing the framework for this sort of a model at the University of Minnesota with sponsorship from MnDOT and the Department of Economic Development. And so anyway, we have experience in doing this sort of work in the public sector. And so we're here as a resource to help guide the process.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your work. And I think the issues you raised around electrification are important. We've considered those a lot over the course of the session so far as well. Our last testifier here is no stranger to our committee and transportation in general in the state, Mr. Lee Munich, University of Minnesota Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Welcome back to the committee. Wonderful
Thank
to
you.
See you again. Lots of good
Thank
friends
you.
Coming back to visit today. State your name for the record. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Lee Munich. I work with the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, and I'm involved in a program called the Transportation Policy and Economic Competitiveness Project, which Chairman Horstein is very familiar with, is a member of our advisory group. And this is funded through MnDOT and the Center for Transportation Studies. We've been doing this research for the last several years, and a major part of that is to look at the freight economy. We focus on key industry clusters in Minnesota, and over the past several years, we focused on two of those industries. One is food, looking at the particularly grain transport. Why more of that is traveling in trucks. Almost a third of the trucks on Minnesota roads are hauling grain. We did quite an extensive study of that industry a couple of years ago. And the project, Quetica, in their optimization work, helped us with some of the data that we needed in order to understand that industry. The other area that we've looked is the health and med tech industry, looking at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, as well as medical device industry, an important industry in the metro area, but also important in terms of supply chain linkages to manufacturing companies in greater Minnesota, such as equipment, plastics, company like Amatech in Jackson and Montevideo that makes parts for medical devices. So the supply chains for these industries not only are national, international in scope, but also companies in Minnesota. The pandemic has caused major disruptions in supply chains and parts throughout throughout these key industries. We've learned, for example, the importance of air transport in the medical device industries, and about half of the medical supplies travel in the belly of commercial passenger trains, or planes, I'm sorry. These were disrupted when Delta dropped their passenger flights, and there was quite a bit of turmoil in being able to transport these products, not only for COVID, but for other ongoing medical purposes, both nationally and internationally. The food industry was disrupted as restaurants closed and food supply needs shifted to supermarkets. And as a result of this, we anticipate that there will be a lot of change and sort of additional looks taken by these companies in terms of the their supply chains coming out of COVID and how they can provide better resiliency, could provide additional economic development opportunities in Minnesota as companies look at whether they want to be as reliant on distant supply chains, but also how do they service all of the markets they're involved in. A few years back, we became familiar with Quetica and their the Iowa optimization study, which led to a major federal grant to optimize freight shipments in central Iowa. And we see this kind of research being particularly important in terms of international air transportation linkages, dealing with congestion issues in the metro area that may affect freight, such as how do medical device companies in Plymouth get their trucks to the airport. We provided some recommendations that led to MnDOT, including managed lanes in their 694 project. So there are a number of different applications, as well as encouraging more resilient suppliers in greater Minnesota, ensuring that we have good linkages. So we think that not only will this project, this optimization research, one of the things about this work that's been done by Quetica is that there's a limited amount of public data that's available to be able to analyze supply chains and to do this type of optimization research. And they serve both private customers as well as public customers. And so they have a lot of data that they can tap into doing this optimization research. So we see that this kind of work could assist certainly in our research and being able to get access to the type of data that we might not ever have in this kind of analytical tool, but also ultimately in terms of public policy, transportation policy, and economic development in Minnesota. And that can be done, this kind of research can benefit in a couple of key ways. One is lowering supply chain costs in Minnesota, which is anything that can be done to make the system more effective in terms of supply chain costs can help in terms of our economy and productivity. It can help in assuring additional reliability and resiliency of our transportation system, increasing overall productivity, which leads to economic development and economic competitiveness and opportunities throughout Minnesota. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mr. Munich. I believe, let's see, that is the, those are the testifiers I have. Representative Elkins, do you have other folks lined up?
Mr. Bill Gardner from MnDOT is available to answer member questions, but I think that's it for our testimony.
Okay, and, well, we have a question from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was under the understanding, too, that there is a bill similar to this in a Senate file, and that we were going to try to do something, or Representative Elkins was going to do something to try to marry the two together. If you would comment on that and maybe what the difference between the two bills are, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Petersburg, for that question. Representative Elkins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg. So I successfully forecasted that there would be a huge logjam at the beginning of the session in the revisor's office. And so I requested that the revisors immediately rejacket the bill from last year with the identical language, whereas Senator Jasinski in the Senate had a new bill draft created. And so while Senate file 289 is the companion bill in the Senate, they're not actually linked in the system because they were both created from different bill drafts. So a delete all amendment is posted with the materials. We're not going to be voting on that today, but the intention would be is that if the chair decides to include this in the omnibus bill, that he would be doing so with the language in that DE amendment, which would align the bill with the Senate language.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Petersburg.
So maybe we, just to be clear, we should probably just talk a little bit about what is the difference between that bill as well. And I think the only difference really is that there's a couple of additional tools or items to be included in this bill. I think one is to identify the bottlenecks, and one is to develop strategic supply chain identification information. So I just thought it was important that we should also hear what the Senate differences are as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
No, that Representative Petersburg, it's helpful. It's helpful to know, Representative Elkins, how this aligns with that language. So members, just one question, Representative Elkins, just to review. So that delete all that you described is Senator Jasinski's bill. Am I tracking that correctly?
Yes. Mr. Burress drafted the DE to align it with the Senate language. Okay. Senator Jasinski's bill, exactly.
Good. But thank you very much for that clarification. Okay, members, are there other questions or comments? This kind of feels like we're going a little bit full circle from some of our initial conversations. Mr. Munich, I was going to call him Representative Munich, Mr. Munich, about that we had at the very beginning of the year around COVID and freight delivery. And so that is no less important. And I appreciate your bringing that up and reminding us of that.
Mr. Chair, this is John.
Yes, Mr. Howe.
I believe Mr. Gardner may have wanted to comment earlier.
Oh. Okay, Mr. Gardner, please, we'd love to hear your perspective on this as one of MDOT's freight specialists. Mr. Gardner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. My name is Bill Gardner. I'm director of the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Just very quickly, this bill would allow us to procure a tool that I think does have the potential to benefit some of the work that we do in the area of freight transportation planning. Working with some of the folks that you've heard from today and other public and private partners, including DEED, you know, we look on a regular basis for ways to improve the efficiency and safety of the freight transportation system by eliminating bottlenecks and improving the capacity and condition of the infrastructure. And a tool like this really could help us give gain a better understanding of how goods and products are moving in the state and how investments that we make in our various programs would affect that movement. And the goal, of course, is to reduce shipping costs, support our businesses, but also to develop a more sustainable freight system by helping to better manage truck traffic growth, for example, and to increase the amount of freight that's being carried by rail and on the waterway system. As was mentioned, there are some changes being discussed in the language in the bill. We did have some concerns, but we are very confident that we can work with the bill author and other parties to address those concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. And I guess I have just a quick question on your last comment. So are you referring then to the DE amendment when you mentioned some concerns, not the original bill? Mr. Gardner?
Chair Hornstein, the Senate version of the bill currently reflects the language that we right. are comfortable with.
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's very helpful to know. And I believe that Representative Elkins then would have allayed those concerns with his amendment. So I got a thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Just wanting to make sure everyone's up to speed. It's an evolving piece of legislation. So I, again, a reminder to members that really what's on the table is the Senate bill. That's what Representative Elkins is putting forward. Okay, are there any other questions or comments? Representative Elkins, do you want to give us your summary and your thoughts moving forward?
Yeah, no, I think the testifiers did a great job describing the bill. And I know we've got a tight target this year, but I think we made a good case for including this within the bill. So
thank you. And Representative Elkins, I think with a lot of these issues, we will be contacting you and seeing maybe if there's a way to do this with, you know, in a manner that it could be moved forward, but perhaps not at the ambitious financial figure that you've put forward. So we'll be in touch about that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure those conversations are happening on the Senate side as well. So to all the testifiers and to Representative Elkins, thank you. And we appreciate your time this afternoon. And this is a very important study, and it's a great coalition of people working on it. So we thank you for that.
Thank you.
And again, so won't make a formal motion, but just to remind the committee, this is under active consideration for inclusion in the omnibus, as all of our bills are today. Okay, we now have our next item on the agenda, which is House File 1566. This is a bill from Representative Bernardi, and we appreciate all of your hard work, Representative Bernardi, on this issue. This bill and then the next bill you have after this, these are two things that you have raised over many years, and we're glad you're still at it. And a lot of your good ideas are kind of built on year after year, and this is another one. So we're going to talk here, members, on non-motorized transportation, and look forward to your testifiers and your bill. Representative Bernardi.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill is a compilation of a lot of ideas that we've discussed in the past years. It's brought to us by advocates that have really dedicated their lives to creating a safer environment to travel about no matter what mode of transportation you use, particularly biking and even walking. This is sort of like a smorgasbord. There might be some things you like more than some things you like less. And but we wanted to lay this out for you to give you, Mr. Chair, the opportunity to evaluate things for inclusion into our omnibus this year. The financial parts of this bill are ideas that we have discussed in the past couple of years, and they were drafted last year when we were still thinking we were going to be in a budget deficit, and many things have changed since then. So some of them are ideas that we might be able to implement, and other ones are probably on the sidelines, but I do want to share what the thought that has been put into this by the advocates. So today the finance provisions are intended to be suggestions to start the conversation, and the Bicycle Alliance and I plan to support the active transportation strategies that are proposed as part of the Chair's Omnibus Transportation Finance and Policy Bill. Here are the ideas included in the bill in Article 1. Section 1 creates a pedal Minnesota license plate and dedicates $20 from each plate to the Active Transportation Program account, Minnesota Statutes 174.38. Section 2 continues the requirement that MnDOT allocate at least 110% of the federal authorization for transportation alternatives.
Section 3 dedicates the sales tax paid on bicycle parts, maintenance, repair, and upgrades on the active transportation program account. Section 4 requires that at least 10% of the sales tax imposed by the Metropolitan Council for Transportation purposes be used for active transportation programs and infrastructure. Section 5 appropriates $3 million to Safe Routes to School infrastructure grants from a bonding bill. Section 6 appropriates $250,000 from the general fund to the Amateur Sports Commission to develop plans for a new velodrome to replace the one at the National Sports Center that after 30 years was recently torn down. I hope that most, if not all, these policy proposals most of them will be considered, and they are, we're going to move into the policy of the Article 2 of the bill, and I'm not going to highlight the parts of the bill that have already been heard. So this Article 2 requires schools to be active transportation safety in addition to bus safety, give government more authority to establishing school zones and related speed limits, requires MnDOT to spend their first $500,000 allocated to active transportation account in Minnesota Statute 174.38 to be spent on developing and implementing an active transportation curriculum for ages 5 to 14. I'm going to skip Article 3, which was on e-bikes that we heard earlier, Section 1 and 6 and 11, and Article 4 are the bicycle policy updates we have already heard. And the last time off of the floor, we passed, I'm not sure if it was the last time, but we have passed it off the floor with 100% of the people voting in favor of it. So that's nice to see the bipartisan support of this. Article 4 also includes Section 2, which requires the Active Transportation Advisory Committee, which is renamed Non-Motorized Transportation Advisory Committee, that is reauthorized in Section 12 to advise MnDOT on the bikeway design guidelines, and requires MnDOT to assist local governments with bikeways, bike routes, and implementing statewide bicycle plans. Section 3, which adds the committee to those advising MnDOT on state bicycle routes. Section 4 designates the Mississippi River Trail bikeway as a state bicycle route. Section 5 designates the route known as the North Star Bicycle Route and U.S. Bike Route 41 as the Jim Oberstar Bikeway, a state bicycle route. And Section 12 creates or reauthorizes the Non-Motorized Transportation Advisory Committee, whose authorization expired a couple of years ago, and renames it to the Active Transportation Advisory Committee. I have Dorian Grilly from the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota and Jason Lardy from the Minnesota Cycling Center, the proposed velodrome, with me today to answer your questions. And I believe Dorian Grilly has a short comment to make. Thank you.
Okay. Why don't we have Mr. Grilly? And then I know there's others that wanted to comment as well. So, Mr. Grilly, did you want to have Mr. O'Rourke comment on the velodrome, Representative Bernardi?
I will leave that up to him if he would like to.
Okay. Mr. O'Rourke?
I think he planned to be here. Oh, there he is.
He's here. I don't know. He might be muted. Mr. O'Rourke, can you hear us? We can't hear you.
It shows he went back on mute.
There he is. Mr. O'Rourke, I think you're unmuted now. We'll move to Mr. Grilly, and then if Mr. O'Rourke is available after that, we can have him. Mr. Grilly, welcome to the committee.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, now we can. Yep. Mr. O'Rourke, we just welcomed the committee. I think there was some reference made to the velodrome. I don't know if you wanted to comment briefly about that. Well, I think we lost Mr. O'Rourke again. Okay, well, we do have Mr. Grilly, though. So, Mr. Grilly, please welcome back to the committee. We've heard from you as well a couple times this year. You're always welcome. Nice to see you again. and welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the executive director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. And I'm really here to answer questions, but I'd quickly like to add a suggestion that Vic Moore, our lobbyist, and I have discussed, that once the federal government provides further guidance on how we may use the $2.6 billion allocated to the state of Minnesota and the $2.1 billion to local governments from the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriation Act of 2021, there may be an opportunity to appropriate some of that money for active transportation. Clearly, the pandemic has increased the number of people biking and walking for a variety of reasons, including to get to work and school and nearby destinations. And in for those of you who don't read the Met Council e-news, yesterday, Chair Zelli shared his story about how much he enjoys bicycle commuting. So we'd simply like to suggest that you consider inserting some placeholder language in the omnibus bill to supplant general fund money with the new federal one-time money in case it is deemed eligible for active transportation uses. And with that, I'll just leave it and answer questions if anybody has some after Mr. O'Rourke talks.
Well, thank you. And Mr. Grilly, thank you again for all of your work. And I sort of refer to this as some kind of an omnibus active transportation bill. But, you know, you raise an important issue that now you're the second person just in the last 3 hours that has talked about the federal bill and what's in it and what may come of it in terms of our work here in the Transportation Committee. And it's sort of, and I hope Representative Petersburg, I want to let you know this as well as the ranking member. It would be my intention after break and after we move the omnibus bill out of the committee to bring in our various state agencies and really ask them their understanding of what is happening with this bill and its impact in Minnesota. Who can access this money? How can it be accessed? I know that's a active item of conversation. It was raised in the Ways and Means Committee. I think it's going to be really important for us to take a look at that, particularly there's a fairly sizable allocation for transit in the metro area that I'm sure people are going to want to look at. So, Mr. Gilley, this is something that we want to get some answers on. And, you know, it's pretty new. This bill was just passed a couple weeks ago in the Senate. So I think it's all being kind of processed now. Representative Mason, to this, or did you want a question to the author or to Mr. Gilley?
I guess no, it's going to be to the author regarding the velodrome.
Okay, why don't we hear from Mr. O'Rourke first, and then we'll take your question, Representative Mason. Okay. Mr. O'Rourke, it's good to see you back, and looks like you're all.
I hope so. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. I can see you, and we're happy that you're with us. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Cap O'Rourke, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Cycling Center. As you know, as many of you may have known, Minnesota used to have a velodrome that was located at the National Sports Center up in Blaine. It was a fantastic infrastructure for our state, and it was able to grow competitive track cycling. We had some of the strongest teams. We created national champions and Olympians on that track. We had one of the largest women's teams and some of the highest, most diverse teams in the country for our track cycling program. Unfortunately, that velodrome lived well beyond its anticipated years, and it eventually had to be torn down despite being saved by the track supporters raising nearly $1 million to improve and keep it alive. There is a small appropriation in this bill that would go to the Amateur Sports Commission to help them help us for new site location and design of a new velodrome. We would like to continue having track cycling and competitive racing in Minnesota. We have a youth program that works with Minneapolis Public Schools and works with our STEM to talk about the science and math of cycling. And so uh, in, in conjunction with the Bicycle Alliance and Mr. Grilly, we really want to keep find an opportunity to keep track cycling in Minnesota and build another velodrome for future generations to enjoy.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. Representative Mason.
Well, the question I have is, over the years, we've had a lot of controversy just even building trails. And my thought is the velodrome, to me, it's more recreation. So how do you justify putting that in the transportation bill?
Well,
Mr. O'Rourke.
I think this came together as this was a package that was put together for the entire cycling community. And we have seen, this is part of how the cycling community, it's one piece of that total package. And so the Bicycle Alliance reached out to us and had included this on some of their legislative agendas. And so that's why this was included in their initial bill. Ideally, this would be introduced as a separate bill and go to the Capital Investment Committee.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. O'Rourke. This provision, along with the provision on safe routes to school, are not meant, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chair Bernardi, are not meant to be funded through this committee via the general fund, but they're being heard here in their bonding capacity, similar to what we did with Representative Hausman on the second line and Representative Murphy. And we are going to hear a bunch of trunk highway bonding proposals after the break as well. So just to be clear, this is in this bill, but really for informational purposes for this committee to know the transportation interface, although it is really technically, as you pointed out, Mr. O'Rourke, a capital investment bill. So I hope that helps, Representative Mason. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we done with testifiers? Are we ready to talk about
the... No, well, I understand there are some testifiers that want to speak to this that were not arranged by the author, and I'm going to call on them next.
I'll speak afterwards then.
Okay. So we have, thank you, Representative Bernardi. We have some other people that signed up to testify on this bill. And the first person, if he's with us, Brian Sorensen, the state traffic engineer. Mr. Sorensen, I see you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Brian Sorensen, state traffic engineer and director of the Office of Traffic Engineering with the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I'm here to testify today on the speed limit sections of House File 1566. But first, let me note that we fully support the spirit and intent of this bill, supporting the safety of our students by providing transportation systems that allow them to get to and from school safely is paramount. I testified to this committee last year on a school zone speed limit bill and discussed the need to address roadway safety comprehensively. Along those lines, this bill appropriates dollars for safe routes to school and provides for active transportation safety funding, as the representative noted, for kindergarten through eighth grade students, which would be a huge step in equipping our students with the knowledge they need to walk and bike to school safely. And we support those elements. There are two parts of the bill that we're concerned with. First, under Section 3, Subdivision 5A, which states each of the local authorities having jurisdiction over a street or highway within a school zone of a public or non-public school may establish a school zone speed limit on any street or highway within that school zone, regardless of jurisdiction over the road. We believe the language is confusing and would create some confusion over which agency has authority over setting the school zone speed limit. And it is possible for schools to have school zones over multiple roadways of differing jurisdictions. So some of this language, I think, needs a little bit of clarification, at least from our viewpoint. I would also note that the way the law currently reads is clear on who has the authority. And if there are multiple jurisdictions involved, the process laid out in the Guide to Establishing Speed Limits in School Zones, which is part of Minnesota's Manual and Uniform Traffic Control Devices, encourages collaboration between the roadway authorities and the school. The other area of concern for us in the bill is under Section 4, Subdivision 5I, school-related speed limits. This section allows the city to set the speed limit on any street or highway within 2 miles of a school speed zone or designated by the city as part of a safe routes to school speed zone. Mr. Chair, if it's permissible, I'd like to share a map to help show how much area a 2 mile radius around the schools in Minnesota would cover. Is that possible?
Absolutely. You can proceed with that, Mr. Sorensen.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this map shows on the left, of course, the state, and on the right, a blow up of the metro area. And you can see, and this includes public and private schools across the state, how much area would be covered by a 2 mile radius around all of those schools. And, you know, in summary, if you look even just at the 494, 694 ring, pretty much everything within that area would fall under those buffers. So this would, based on the amount of roadways covered in those buffers, we believe this would constitute a significant shift in the way speed limits are set in our state. And our concerns with this would include, first, we appreciate that the bill requires that school-related speed limit be established on the basis of an engineering and traffic investigation as prescribed by the Commissioner of Transportation, but many cities don't have staff that are familiar with that process. It could therefore become challenging for cities to ensure they're following the process as prescribed. And secondly, and I think the larger issue here is that there's a perception that lowering the number on a speed limit sign equates to safety. And there lots of study and experience over the years across the country and even the world has shown that often it's not true. And we're concerned that local authorities will lower speed limits with the expectation without fully evaluating all of the potential approaches that could be taken to address traffic safety issues in the areas surrounding our schools. In addition, it's likely that speed limits set unreasonably low would introduce safety issues that don't currently exist. I will note here that this all assumes that we continue to enforce speed limits as we do today. If we were to introduce other approaches to enforcement, such as automated enforcement systems in school zones, the driver response to lower speed limits would likely be different. And it's more likely that safety could be achieved through lower speed limits. Lastly, Mr. Chair, the bill includes establishment of an active transportation advisory committee. If that were to happen, we'd be willing to work with the committee to consider school-related speed issues and to develop potential solutions as part of the committee's work. And I'll wrap up by noting we appreciate Representative Bernardi's efforts to enhance safety near schools, and we're ready to work with her and others on the legislation as it moves forward. I'll stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Sorensen. And so just to review, members, there's a couple more testifiers, and then we'll get to questions, and we have Representative Petersburg first on the list. But before that is Marcus Culver from Roseville Public Works with us, and also we heard from Mr. Culver, I think, earlier, City Engineers Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I would ask that perhaps Mr. Deasy from the County Association testify before me.
Okay, good. Thank you, Mr. Culver, and it's good to see you again. Okay, Brian Giese, from Polk County and also MCEA president. It's nice to see you again before the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this today. And really would echo exactly all of the testimony provided by Mr. Sorensen with MnDOT. Counties in the state as well as cities have been working together to understand this language. And just to note, the safety of all roadway users, especially near schools, is central to the mission of Minnesota's county engineers. Our association strongly supports the implementation of proven effective strategies to improve safety of our students. And we think the current statute already allows great latitude for road authorities in setting speed limits in school zones effectively. So the provisions of concern for counties are both in Article 2, Section 3 and Section 4, as Mr. Sorensen highlighted. And specifically, the language in Section 3 of Article 2 that allow a road authority to change the speed limit on any road within a school zone, even if it's not under their jurisdiction, we find very troubling, and the language creates some conflicting claims to speed limit authority that exists within statute. In Article 2 and Section 4, where cities are allowed to change a speed limit on any street or highway within 2 miles of a school zone, regardless of jurisdiction over the road, is also a concern for us, as highlighted by Mr. Sorensen. So with that, we would appreciate if consideration of those concerns would be made as this important bill continues to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Giese. And then our last testifier is, that would be Mr. Culver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it is good to see you too, as well. My name is Mark Culver. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Roseville. Today, I'm representing the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. First of all, we join our previous testifiers in support of the spirit of this bill and the additional funding for Safe Routes to School and other non-motorized funding opportunities. However, we also join our colleagues at MnDOT and the Minnesota Counties and Engineers Association with our concern over various provisions of House File 1566. As both organizations have already testified, we feel that the Commissioner of Transportation should have the exclusive role and authority for establishing speed limits on roadways with the higher functional classifications such as county roads and state trunk highways. It's a slippery slope to allow local political bodies the authority to establish speed limits on roadways that are not in their jurisdiction. We also agree with our colleagues that the current system for establishing school speed zones works. It's clearly defined in state statute today and is supported by both the federal and state manual on uniform traffic control devices. We don't think anything's broken in the current method, and we don't feel any changes are necessary there. As to school-related speed limits, 2 years ago, this legislature enacted subdivision 5H within Chapter 169 of the state statutes, giving cities the authority to establish speed limits on roadways within their jurisdiction. While cities are still learning how to apply this new statute, and we're working together to try to provide some consistency and continuity in the application of that statute, we feel that that statute gives cities the authority to set speed limits on their own roadways, given engineering principles and considering the context of the roadway environment. So we feel that for local roadways, this statute already gives cities the ability to set speed limits on a local roadway with consideration and influence of a nearby school and other contextual considerations if need be. As for county and state roadways, we feel very strongly that local agencies should not have the authority to set a speed limit on a roadway that is not in their jurisdiction. Cities absolutely should be partners in that discussion, and we should advocate for speed limits that consider the context of the road environment, but the authority to set that speed limit should stay with the Commissioner of Transportation. At the city level, we certainly recognize a shift in our transportation culture to a more non-motorized modes of travel. We deal with this every day, and we are changing the way we build roadways and trails. We welcome the opportunity to be included as an official member of the Active Transportation Advisory Committee if that is reestablished. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Giese. And let's get right into questions now. First on the list is Representative Petersburg, followed by Representative Mason. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bernardi, for bringing this bill forward. It's quite expansive, and I think with that expanse makes it a little bit more challenging. There are a few things that kind of raise red flags for me that have concern. One of them was just talked about, and that had to do with cross-jurisdictional issues regarding speed limits. I think that was a concern that I would have had, as well as some of the other things that we are mandating here, such as school districts, in which the Department of Transportation and our committee here maybe shouldn't be as much involved with school as it's there. Certainly a request, a suggestion is helpful there, but I think those have some concerns. The other one that I have, and maybe Mr. Lee or somebody can ask, because I think it is a novel idea to start thinking about how do we get more funding into bike trails and walking trails, because Representative Bernardi, you've been a champion for that for a long time. So I appreciate that passion that you have, and I have the same passion for safety of everybody as well. But how do we get more funding in for that? So the two areas that I have concern is of course, the 10% of sales tax from the metropolitan area. It seems to me that kind of takes away funding for other areas, transit and other things that we need to do. And until we really get a handle on how we fund that, maybe that's a challenge. So I'm curious as to what that might be. And then the other related cost is the sales tax on bicycle parts. Do we have any idea as to what that might entail as far as dollar amounts?
I do not. Thank you for those questions. Yeah, thank you for those questions, Representative Petersburg. We do not have the, I've not pursued the cost on the sales tax. It's not my favorite option. I'm laying these out for the Bicycle Alliance and the advocates of the ideas that they came up with. And as far as the transit one, that, you know, there isn't even a transit proposal before us. So it's just laying out ideas and some ideas in which could be considered moving forward. And some probably are hopeful and some maybe are non-starters. So thank you for that. And then we definitely need to be working with all of our partners to making it the roadway safe for our schools. And so there definitely would need to be language developed and be workable with all the different agencies before it probably would be included in a bill. And I think Representative Hornstein knows that as well, but I think the spirit of intent of everyone's is the same, to make it safe for our students.
Representative Petersburg, did you have a follow-up?
Just to say thank you for working on this. I think there are some issues that still need to be resolved yet in order to get this all together, but there may be some pieces of it that are worthwhile, and that will certainly be up to the chair. So thank you for bringing this forward, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your questions. And Representative Petersburg, I know that you had mentioned nonpartisan staff. Were you able to get the information you needed from Representative Bernardi? Did you want them to comment at all?
Well, I was just inquiring if we had any information in what these items might be raising in regards to sales tax, or what the costs might be as well. And it sounds like that hasn't been pursued. So I don't know that there is an answer.
Okay, yeah, that's my understanding as well, Representative Petersburg. Let's see, I thought at one time I did see, was it Representative Mason? There was another hand up.
Yes, okay.
Mason, yes.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. Because I sat on the Eden City Council for a number of years, I never kept track of how many residents came before us that wanted to change the speed limit on our various roads. But I can tell you right now that is a major problem, because we've had some engineers already talk about that. It's really hard to get your day-to-day citizen to really believe what the engineers are telling us. So that's a huge thing. But I know over the years, we did do a number of different things, like putting chokeholds in the roads and putting up signs about reminding people how fast they were driving. I mean, we tried to use everything, but this is one area where perception is reality, and it is tough. I mean, it's really tough when you're talking about speed limits. That's all.
Thank you. Well, I think some important issues were raised about jurisdictional issues, and I know that Representative Bernardi is attentive to that and will work through those, but I think also the issue of school zone safety is critical. But I appreciate the engineering communities weighing in on this. It's important. I think consistency is important both for the public and for enforcement purposes. But this is an issue that, and I'm seeing you, Representative Mason, I think I've referenced this before the committee before. I've spent some time in Eagan. There was a very tragic fatality of a student going to school, I believe a 13-year-old. I think I've mentioned to the committee that I went at the invitation of Representative Morrison in the fall of 2019, spent an afternoon
Alverson?
At a, no, Kelly Morrison.
Oh, okay.
I went to, Representative Alverson did invite me to your meeting in Eagan, but shortly after that, I was like in the same week, actually, I went to Deep Haven area and at junior high school and Representative Morrison's invitation and a whole bunch of students and teachers and parents. I think there was some law enforcement officials very, very concerned about school safety and traffic issues at that elementary. So it was a junior high school, actually. I don't remember. Maybe it was County Road 41. I don't remember. But out in that area. So this is a very, this issue is widely felt. I want to say that to you, Representative Bernardi. I mean, I would say that in the last couple of years, especially, I'm just been invited to more and more just very local community-based meetings where people are concerned about students biking and walking to school. So this is timely. It's important. I hope we can work through some of the issues that have been raised. This is why we have hearings, right? You put some ideas out and we get reaction and then we can tweak things and improve them and hopefully come to some consensus. So with that, I wanted to see if anyone else was on the line that I might have missed that wanted to testify on this bill. And then I'll ask Representative Bernardi to make some closing comments.
We got a few more questions for members too, Mr.
Chair. Oh, you know what? I switched computers, Mr. Howe, and for some reason on this particular computer, the other one's running out of battery. I can't see hands up. It's kind of weird. It's just a little bit strange, but I'll rely on you, Mr. Howe, to call on member to let me know who has their hands up.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Representative Heinrich is next, I believe. Mr. Greeley has his hand up, and Representative Elkins also has his hand up.
Okay, so let's go in that order. Heinrich, Greeley, Elkins. Representative Heinrich.
Well, thank you, Chair Hornstein. I just wanted to express a couple concerns, but you know, a lot of that has been covered to this point. So I want to thank Representative Bernardi for the concern around the school zones and the speed limits. My concerns did get already kind of aired out by yourself, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg as well. So with that, I'll just thank Mr. Sorensen and others for their testimony. It sounds like Representative Bernardi is certainly willing to continue to work through this issue in the spirit of safety around our school zones. So thank you for the time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and good to see you, Representative Heinrich. Okay, Mr. Greeley, did you want to weigh in on the conversation? Sounds like you do.
I just wanted to, Dorian Greeley again, Mr. Chair, committee members. I just wanted to thank Mr. Culver for the excellent suggestion that this would be a top priority topic for the Active Transportation Advisory Committee should it be reinstated. And I would welcome the opportunity to work with MnDOT, committee members, Mr. Culver, and others to come back in next year with a proposed solution to this problem.
Thank you, Mr. Greeley. I think there's some good arguments being made for reinstatement of that committee. Representative Elkins is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're spending a lot of time talking about speed limits, and
you're the author of the bill from last
term. So, I spent a decade, researching this issue back in the 2000s. Served along with Representative Bernardi on MnDOT's Complete Streets Task Force, and was probably one of the most frequent visitors to the old MnDOT library, searching the archives for relevant, National Cooperative Highway Research, program reports on the topic. I just want to, give my overall perspective on this issue, kind of as a level set. I would agree with the engineers in one sense, is that I think that the design of the roadway is much more influential on the speeds that drivers drive on those roadways than the speed limit is. The engineers talk about the three E's, engineering, enforcement, and education. The three legs of controlling the speed on roadways. And I think engineering, I would agree with them that I think engineering is the most important of the three. If you build 36-foot wide residential roads in a suburban network and there's hardly anybody parking on the street, you're going to get speeding. And unfortunately, that's the way many of our second and third ring and further out suburbs were built. And so we have speeding issues. On the other hand, if you look at a city like Minneapolis or St. Paul, where the street networks were developed largely, 75 to 100 years ago, and there are many streets that are maybe 26, 28 feet wide, jammed with parking on both sides, I think 20 miles per hour is a reasonable speed limit in those contexts. And under the previous laws, those cities couldn't lower their speed limits to an appropriate level. Now they can. The other thing it's finally sunk in for me after 20 years studying this issue is, if you look at the data, every driver knows that as long as you stay within 10 miles per hour of the speed limit, you're probably not going to get a ticket. So while 30 miles per hour is probably the correct speed to be targeting on a typical suburban residential street, the only way you're going to achieve that speed is by setting the speed limit at 25. And the reason why, cities, are loath to go through the typical traffic engineering study is that engineers are over-reliant on what's referred to as the 85 percentile rule. That the idea that the speed limit ought to be set at a level at which 85% of the drivers are traveling that speed or less in order to maintain, consistency in the traffic flow. But I've never actually been able to find and read the study that's based on, but what I've read of it tells me that it's primarily, intended to be used in the context of multi-lane roads where you don't want people in adjoining lanes traveling at greatly varying speeds. It really doesn't have that much application to a two-lane road in a residential context, but what the application of the rule from an engineering perspective results in is that if everybody on this road is currently speeding because the road was built too large, if you do this study, it's going to say no, we actually ought to raise the speed limit to reflect the speed at which the traffic is actually moving, and so cities aren't going to use that process because it ends up, resulting in increased speed limits, even in school zones. So I just, when we're having these conversations, I just ask, kind of keep these factors in mind in terms of, looking at what the big picture is. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the indulgence.
Thank you. Well, I thank you very much, Representative. I was thinking of you and that bill that you passed in the 2019-2020 biennium, and actually makes a big difference in my community. Okay, members. Mr. Howe, is there anyone else? I'm going to just be counting on you here to. No idea. I must have touched something, and now I can't get hands up on my computer. I don't know. I can't explain.
There are no hands up from what I can see in the participants panel, Mr. Chair.
What's that?
There are no current hands up, Mr. Chair.
Oh, that's probably where I should look. Okay. Thank you for that.
In the participants link.
Yeah. There we go. Thank you. Sometimes it's something that easy on a technology issue. Okay, members. Well, thank you. Representative Bernardi, do you want to wrap up here and then we'll transition into your next bill?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really enjoyed that conversation and perspective of everyone on this. And what I take away from it is that people are really wanting to make a difference and figuring out how to solve this problem. I got a chuckle out of Representative Elkins when he said he's been researching this for 10 years. One thing about this work is called persistence, and it's keeping at it and working together to come up with solutions that really make a difference in people's life and actually really save lives. So thank you for hearing this bill today and having this conversation. And I look forward moving forward and working together to come up with solutions that help keep our
students safe and all the people who choose the mode of transportation of biking on the roadways and people who walk as well. So thank you very much for considering these ideas. Some of them may be non-starters, some of them may be in the infancy stages, and some are ready to go, and we appreciate your support. So thank you very much.
Okay, members, and with that, House File 1566, certainly parts of it are under serious consideration for inclusion in our omnibus bill. So our next item, members, we're going to continue on with Representative Bernardi. She has House File 1788, Transportation Commissioner required to implement trunk highway performance measures with annual targets and reports, or a report. So Representative Bernardi, why don't you, again, the bill that's under consideration for our omnibus bill, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's really an honor to be here today to bring this bill forward, because talking about persistence and working together, we finalized our language today in which MnDOT is okay with, and we've been working on this a long time together, and we are happy that we've been able to pull together a bill that is implementable by MnDOT, and that we can hopefully include in our omnibus this year, Mr. Chair. So I'll tell you a little bit, I'll tell you about it. It started out in first of all, our roads and transportation system is crumbling, and we all know that. And this bill has had bipartisan support across multiple years by a number of legislators. And I know Representative Petersburg and I briefly talked this week, and I hope to have his support again this year. So we have a $600 million gap, and our goal is to get the funding that we need. Some of the things that we can do to help with our transportation system, our commissioner is really focused on, and that's sustainability, innovation, data, and equity, and I applaud her for her efforts. Mr. Chair, you helped me get involved in this work way back when, and it was, you know, it began in the federal performance of our interstate system and a lot of the work that Representative Congressman Oberstar did, and then it was beyond MAP 21 and working at ways in which we can measure the performance of our trunk highway system. So this focuses on performance, our asset management best practices, sustainability of our infrastructure and financially, and you know, resiliency and making sure that we're resilient, whether it's weather or pandemic or economy. And the first part of this bill passed in 2019, and it was the inventory, and that we have our asset categories are happening at MnDOT, from roads, bridges, geotechnical, bike, ped, transit, those types of things. And then this is what I bring before you is the next phase of the bill. And what it does is it sets targets, and these are then measuring progress towards those targets. They'd be looked at annually and in collaboration with the public. Each the districts are involved in MnDOT. I sent you the language because it's hot off the press. But if this was a normal hearing, we would have the DE2 amendment, which is language that MnDOT and I came to agreement with the last 2 days. And I just want to point out in our bill on, that's a little bit hard because I think, Mr. Chair, you're ready to send this out to committee members so they have it. But I'll just point out, that the bill on 1.915, we just added language about where practicable that we would do lead predictive measures. And then this is getting technical, but I just want to make sure that everybody knows that some of the language has changed. And then in line 0.116, we took out and to be achieved by each district of the department. And then when 2.1, we canceled out annual investment plans for all asset categories and added 10-year capital highway investment plans, and that already include in each district of the department. And then we pulled out in line, showing up as line 2.4-ish. I have a blank spot here on my copy, but we took out the part about being environmentally and economically sustainable. We took that out. And then we added 6 years into the section that's about including our asset categories. And then professional engineer licensed in the area of Minnesota, we substitute department's chief engineer. So those are super technical, but it just shows the work that's gone in to make sure that this language is workable, that it helps and it benefits our state. We all want a robust and healthy transportation system, and it's what we measure. And this is a great way to collaborate with the public, communicate with the legislature, and to ensure that we have a transportation system that meets the needs of Minnesotans now and in the future. And I want to thank all the people involved, from MnDOT staff, commissioner, for their support and help in getting this to the point to bring it before our members, and also thank our members for their bipartisan support. We're not going to vote it out of committee today, but it's voted. The cool thing is it's been voted out unanimously, I believe, at least 2 times in our committee by all the Democrats and Republicans. So that's a refreshing thing to have kind of support for this type of bill. So thank you for listening to my bill today, Chair and members.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Bernardi, and thank you for all of your hard work over the years on this concept. I think there's a performance measures 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, and you're always revising and adjusting, adapting, updating, and that's appreciated. So I think we'll look forward to this year's version as well. Members, did you want Representative Bernardi to, I know that there was, you've been working very closely with MnDOT, and I applaud you for, your ability to come to consensus with them on this bill. Did you want Mr. Schaffner or anyone else to weigh in, or did you just want to present the bill and have the committee ask questions? What's your preference, Chair Bernardi?
Well, if they want to weigh in on their, it's up to them what MnDOT wants to do. I believe that I've represented them accurately. If I haven't, I definitely want them to weigh in, but I will leave it up to their.
Okay. Members, I think if Mr. Schaffner is interested in testifying or weighing in, he's welcome to. Otherwise, we can go straight to committee questions. Is Mr. Sure. Schaffner on the line?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Schaffner, did you want to weigh in a little bit, or it's entirely up to you?
Just very briefly to say, it's Philip Schaffner. I'm the manager of statewide planning at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. We appreciate the opportunity to work with Representative Bernardi on the bill. And I'll just say that MnDOT has long used and definitely supports the use of performance measures and performance targets in our planning process, and have been working to strengthen and grow our asset management planning program, which is consistent with the direction of this bill. And I'm available to answer questions should you or the committee have any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schaffner. I think at this point, let's revert to member questions of the author or Mr. Schaffner. Now that Mr. Howe has told me what to do, I'll call on Representative Petersburg because I see his hand up. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I think we do want to have some follow-up with the department itself. First of all, thank you to Representative Bernardi for bringing this forward. I have co-authored this bill in the past with her, and it's gone a long ways. And it shows really the hard work that she's done up to this point and trying to get everybody involved. Every time we'd worked on something, some other issue would come up. And so I think it's important for us to keep moving forward. The Department of Transportation agency and the staff that reports directly underneath it is one of the largest that we have here in the state. And our committee kind of oversees at least the policy and development of funding for it. And so it's always important for us as a committee and as legislature to feel comfortable in the fact that we are utilizing our dollars the best that we can. And I think some of these processes that Representative Bernardi has put in place and are suggesting will help develop that confidence in it. And so I think it's important for us to hear further from the department if they see that there's still some areas that need to be worked on or not, because I think that's where we can continue to make this better itself. So I would like continued follow-up feedback from them if possible, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Did you want Mr. Schaffner to comment now, or is that just sort of a general, make sure MnDOT is engaged as we move forward?
Well, if he has some information now, I'd appreciate that now, and then we'll okay. continue on with forward.
Mr. Schaffner.
The department has no further recommendations at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Schaffner.
All right, thank you. Well, I understand what that means. So we'll keep on working, and thank you, Representative Bernardi, for putting this forward. We'll see where it goes, but I think there are some really good points in this bill, so thank you for that.
I appreciate your comments, Representative Petersburg, and your question. Okay, Representative Bernardi, any last thoughts, and then we'll move on to our last bill of the day.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Petersburg. I appreciate your comments and your work on this bill over the years. We've had both all different parties' authorship on this, actually three-way party authorship on this bill in the past, and we didn't have three parties back then, but we do now. So anyway, I want to thank you for that, and it was nice talking with you this week, because we've really gotten this bill honed down, and it's a really good bill, and I appreciate all the expertise by MnDOT getting us to this point. And the cool thing about this bill is that, you know, it ties to our transportation goals. It uses the expertise of our transportation department. It builds confidence with the legislature, like Representative Petersburg said, and it involves the public. So this is a really good bill, and it's been bipartisan, and thank you for hearing this bill today and for the comments and for MnDOT's
thank support, you, Representative MnDOT's
involvement.
Thank you, Representative okay. Bernardi, for your hard work on this over many years. So with that, members, we will move on to our next bill, but I just wanted to let folks know that House File 1788 is also under active consideration for inclusion in our omnibus bill. So members, our last bill of the day is House File 1894, and we're also hearing this on an informational basis. This relates to Highway 169 on the Iron Range, and it actually is a tie-in to our previous bill because, you know, it is about planning and about implementing. And so, Representative Sandstedt, are you on the line?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Sandstedt, and welcome to the Transportation Committee. It's wonderful to see you. And please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1894 is the bill that actually requires the Commissioner of Transportation to incorporate improvements of marked U.S. Highway 169 from a two-lane undivided highway to a four-lane divided highway for the remaining approximate 9 mile section of the Cross Range Expressway from Taconite to Pengilly. The Crossway Expressway was designed to run between Grand Rapids and Hibbing, and in the past 30 plus years, about 2/3 of the project has been completed, but completion of the approximate 9 mile remaining section remains unfinished and continues to compete with the state's limited funding and transportation needs across the state. Many of the local studies and environmental impact studies are in need of updates due to the lack of completion of this project in its original timeframe. This bill appropriates $95,000 to be used for cost estimating, environmental permitting, and preliminary engineering needed for the project completion. The dollars invested in this project would provide an opportunity for increased commerce with existing industries and emerging industries, something that is desperately needed on the Iron Range. Most importantly, however, the completion of this project, of this section of the highway, would address evidenced and ongoing safety issues. On behalf of my district, I do want to extend my thanks and appreciation to Dwayne Hill from District 1 and the Department of Transportation in addressing the many safety concerns and incidents that have transpired over the last several years. Indeed, investments have been made with striping and turn lanes into the Greenway Volunteer Fire Department and safety improvements at the intersection of Highway 169 and Highway 65, but these projects do not resolve the list of ongoing concerns. With me today, I have Itasca County Commissioner Ben DiNucci, as well as John Turla, to talk more about this project.
Thank you, Representative Sandstedt. And I just, before your testifiers start, I just wanted to, you know, thank you for bringing this to our attention. You have been an advocate on 169 from the moment you stepped into the legislature. That was one of the first conversations we had when you were a freshman legislator. So I appreciate how you have championed this issue for your district, and I hope we can move some issues forward this year. So with that, Commissioner DiNucci, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Ben DiNucci, and I am a county commissioner in Itasca County in the 5th District, which is the home to the 9-mile segment of Highway 169 described in House File 1894. I drive this segment almost daily in my commute from my home in Nashwauk to our county offices in Grand Rapids. And I'm pleased to report to the committee I am still alive to tell the tale, as this section of roadway contains the infamous Snowball Lake curve. This is an extremely dangerous part of the road where I personally witnessed semi-trucks on their sides, vehicles over the guardrail, and been the participant in numerous near-missed accidents myself. Yet these are not the worst things I have witnessed here. I'm a member of my local volunteer fire department. The last call out I participated in with my fellow firefighters a few weeks ago was a car accident at the Snowball Lake curve on Highway 169. That was the first time I zipped a body bag closed with a deceased patient inside it. And as we left the accident scene, I couldn't help but notice the white memorial cross marking a previous fatal accident that was literally at the same spot we were called to that morning. I think it's important to note that this past Wednesday, there was a fatal car accident just 2 miles from this location outside the city of Calumet. Unfortunately, I don't believe it will be the last one. I'd like to bring up a unique point that you may be aware of or may be unaware of. Iron ore has been and may again be transported in trucks along this specific piece of highway. And while that iron ore benefits the state's school trust, helping to pay for the first quarter of every public school in Minnesota, we receive no consideration or bonus points for this unique transportation characteristic in the MnDOT 10-year plan. Meanwhile, the benefactor of the end product of this mineral soaks up all of MnDOT's District 1 project funding. Doesn't seem very equitable to us. The struggling area of the Iron Range needs to increase the flow of commerce by completing the Cross Range Expressway, which is the sole major highway connecting communities across the Iron Range from Virginia to Grand Rapids. The remaining 8 miles of two-lane highway is a barrier to economic growth, and over time will pose even larger concerns and constraints to achieving economic diversification. So for these reasons, we believe this work should be added to MnDOT's 10-year priority list. We ask for your support of the appropriation of funds outlined in House File 1894 to start the completion of the Cross Range Expressway. Thank you, and I'll stand for your questions.
Thank you so much, Commissioner DiNucci. We're going to hear from Mayor Turla, and then we'll open it up for questions of our testifiers and the office. Mayor Turla, welcome to the Transportation Committee. Good to see you. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming my microphone and...
We can see you and hear you quite well, so...
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I apologize. I'm sitting in the Detroit airport right now as I'm talking to you, where my wife and I are on our way home from our son's house in Maine back to Calumet. And this is where I had the pilot land so I could talk to the committee today.
Well, you have a lot of the mayor of Calumet, Minnesota, has a lot of power, I think.
Well, anyway, thank you again for allowing me to speak. My name is John Turla. I've been a resident of Calumet for most of my life. I'm currently in my 14th year of serving as mayor of the city. Calumet is located nearly in the center of the 8 or 9 miles of two-lane highway that we're talking about today. My comments today focus mainly on the safety ramifications or lack thereof, that go a long way with continuing Highway 169 as a two-lane thoroughfare, or these, for these unfinished 8 miles of the Cross Range Expressway. The 8 miles, I know Representative Sansett says 9 miles, and I think it, the figure is probably between 8 and 9, but it remains the same. The 8 miles that we're talking about go by or are actually adjacent to Twin Lakes, Mud Lake, Snowball Lake, and Oxide Lake. All four of these bodies of water play a large role in determining the condition and safety of the highway passing nearby. Living in northern Minnesota, we know that especially during the fall, winter, and spring seasons, freezing rain and sleet, along with wind and blowing snow, can cause road conditions to deteriorate in a matter of minutes, sometimes with little or no warning. Black ice on road surfaces is deadly, and the air around Snowball Lake, as Commissioner DiNucci just referred to, has proven to be extremely deadly. 2 days ago, I testified before a Senate committee considering Highway 169. In a conversation I had earlier that morning with our Greenway Fire Department Chief, Lad Finke, he told me that in any given year, the fire department expects to be called to a couple car accidents at each of the four different locations along that 8 mile stretch of highway. And they have come to expect that at least one of those accidents will involve a fatality. His memory told him that at least 10 fatalities have occurred on that area of Tulane during his 15 years on the fire department. And without looking back at the records, he felt that even that number was low. The four areas are the former Ferryland curve by Twin Lakes, just west of Marble, the intersection at Ron's Corner Market, the intersection and curve east of Calumet going to Red Lake, and worst area of all, that stretch of infamous highway going past Snowball Lake. Ironically and tragically, I received word from Ladd just hours after I spoke with him on Wednesday that another fatal accident had happened near the Red Lake intersection. I'm well aware of many of the accidents and personally knew many of the victims, and I'm fully convinced that many of these incidents could have been avoided had the highway been improved and widened to four lanes years ago, when the rest of the Cross Range Expressway was either completed or extended. I understand that barriers exist to completing this project in a cheap, and I hesitate to use that word, in a cheap manner. With proper planning and engineering, however, it can be done. The relocating of Highway 53 in the Eveleth, Virginia area is a shining example of what MnDOT can do when the need is there. And what kind of a price tag do we put on human lives? I also know that northern Minnesota cannot compete with metropolitan areas when it involves traffic counts. However, you don't need multiple thousands of vehicles a day when it comes to an unsafe, two-lane, weather-affected stretch of highway like the 8 miles we're talking about. Many folks travel from Hibbing to Grand Rapids for their employment on a daily basis, and this deadly stretch of highway is right in the center of that daily commute for many people. When I was first elected mayor in 2007, Highway 169 was in terrible physical shape. I remember referring to it as a goat road and or goat trail, and that got a lot of attention by a lot of people. There have been improvements such as resurfacing, but the footprint is still the same for these 8 or 9 miles of two lane, and the dangers still exist. I sincerely hope both the House and the Senate take action to move this bill forward and allow engineering and pre-construction planning to take place. It is way past time to make this project shovel ready and for it to be put on MnDOT's 10-year highway plan. The residents and visitors of northern Minnesota deserve nothing less. Thank you for allowing me to speak today, and thank you for understanding the dangerous situation that exists for all of us who travel this stretch of highway in Itasca County. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mayor Tarilla, and thank you for your public service as well.
You're very welcome.
Commissioner DiNucci. Members, does anyone have any questions of either Representative Sandstead, Commissioner DiNucci, Mayor Tarilla? Okay, well, hang on. Let's just make sure. I'm going to double check here. Yes, a hand just popped up. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Sandstead, for bringing this bill forward. I just want to remind members how this points out the real need for legislative input into the project selection process, a question that we've been trying to answer for some time, and how it may fit in with the Corridors of Commerce program that is already established and may be that avenue for legislative input. I congratulate Representative Sandstead on her creativity, but I remind members that it's not the only project in the state that has similar issues. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to comment.
Well, Representative Torkelson, I was kind of thinking you might weigh in on that. And, I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, either Mayor, Commissioner, Representative Sandstead, I believe that Highway 69 was the beneficiary of some early corridors support, but maybe not. I don't remember exactly, but it is a corridor of commerce, that's for sure. Commissioner DiNucci, you mentioned the mining interplay here as well. So, okay, well, thank you, Representative Torkelson. Any other questions? Okay, well, we will consider this bill as well, Representative Sandstead, in our discussions on the omnibus, and we look forward to continued conversation, and I know that we both of us have been in contact with MnDOT, and we will continue to be in contact with MnDOT as this process goes forward. So thank you to you, Representative Sandstead, and your testifiers.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, do you want to? Oh, yes, let's have some final closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. No, thank you very much. Members, I do want to point out in your packets, there is a letter from RAMS in support of this project. Please take a moment to look at that. And yes, this may have been a creative approach. And I'm not going to apologize for that. I am going to say that each one of us here on the committee and in the legislature run for office to improve the lives of people. And it's my hope today that the state can come forward with solutions to offer families, to offer those in the community, rather than our condolences. And with that, I would just very, very much appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sandstead. And I think that the safety issues along this stretch of road were highlighted very effectively by you and your testifiers, especially the recent tragedy that took place. So thank you for highlighting that. Again, members, this will be under consideration for the committee, and appreciate again, Representative Sandstead, you're bringing this to us.
Thank you.
Members, we have a couple more items of business to take care of before we adjourn. I know that many on our committee and some in the public have been waiting for House File 2198, and you're wondering why we're not talking about House File 2198 today. Well, that was no longer on the agenda because an agreement on this issue was reached with MnDOT, and I did want to at least have Representative Heinrich share with us a little bit about the issue that's at hand here. And congratulations, Representative Heinrich, for making a difference in your community on this issue. And just wanted to see if you had a couple of thoughts that you wanted to share with us, and then we can move on to our final item.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thanks again for your willingness to hear my bill. House File 2198 was requesting that MnDOT put a stoplight in on the intersection of Highway 47 and McKinley Street in Anoka. This is a very busy road, and MnDOT's planning a project here this summer, and we just wanted to include a signal there because we thought it would be a way to help keep our neighbors safe. And so I really appreciate your consideration, Mr. Chair. And yes, you're correct. We did come to an agreement with MnDOT, and I'm thankful for that. And thankful for the people at MnDOT for their hard work. And just appreciate your willingness to hear the bill. But I will formally withdraw House File 2198 from today's agenda. So thank you again, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich, and for your hard work on this. And I think there's sort of a little bit of a interplay between these last two
items on our agenda and Representative Torkelson's comments, quite frankly. We have so many roads in our state that need attention. And I'll tell you that one of the common denominators on these last two have to do with safety. And so, you know, building a safe infrastructure as well as one that benefits our economy is are really our priorities. And so I appreciate your bringing this to our attention, Representative Heinrich, and you know, I think we should keep those safety issues in mind as we move forward. So I'm glad you were able to come to some agreements and understandings with MnDOT, and it sounds like that's one of the themes of the day. Representative Bernardi had a lot of luck today on getting some things done here. So a good way to end before we move on to our Easter Passover break. So members, there's one last item and before we adjourn, and Representative Petersburg had a great idea that he shared with me earlier this week. And that is on Tuesday, the House Ways and Means Committee passed a budget resolution. Different divisions of the legislature were allocated specific amounts of general fund money. There were also some allocations based on some earlier bills that had been under consideration by the broader whole. So the Transportation Committee was allotted general fund monies. And I'm going to call on Mr. Lee. Just again, we have some new folks to the committee. We have others that are more veterans of the process, but it's always helpful, I think, to kind of go over where we're at in the process now. And one of the reasons we had, you know, this extended meeting today and heard a lot of bills this week is that we're now moving into a new phase where we put together an omnibus bill. And it was my hope that we could hear as many ideas as possible ahead of putting that bill together. And that's what I think we accomplished this week. And so I'm going to call on Mr. Lee just to kind of walk us through the targets process, what that means, and maybe give us his sense of, you know, where we head from here as a committee. I think it's helpful. That was a great suggestion, Representative Petersburg, and I think important for the committee and the public to get a sense of where things stand right now. So, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, as you said, the House Ways and Means Committee came out with a budget resolution that includes the general fund target for the Transportation Finance Committee. The general fund target is includes both spending that is above base and the base. So the base is what was set in law for general fund spending in the last budget session in 2019. So the current law base for transportation general fund spending is $249 million. And the House Ways and Means Committee target for transportation is $289 million. So that's a $39 million increase in the general fund target or in the general fund spending for the Transportation Finance Committee over base. To give some context of what the base funding is for this committee, just in kind of very, very large numbers, the largest piece, single piece of that is $177 million for the Metropolitan Council, of which $112 million is for Metro Mobility. And then the remaining amounts is $38 million for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And of that, almost all of it is for the for Greater Minnesota Transit. And then the remaining agency that is partly in the committee's jurisdiction, the Department of Public Safety, the base funding for that is $33 million. So the budget resolution target that $38 million increase over base. The resolution is just a top line number, and it's up to the chair and the committee to decide how to spend that and if to include all the base items or where the increases would be. So with that, I hope that's helpful. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. That's exactly what I was hoping you could cover. And members, do you have any questions of Mr. Lee? As it pertains to the budget resolution, its relationship with our committee, and moving forward.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I'm just hoping that Mr. Lee can just, you know, put those figures into just a little one-sheet spreadsheet to send to Mr. Howe to get out to the rest of us. I went through them pretty fast, but I got the most of them. But it's always helpful to know those figures. Thank you.
Thanks. That's a good suggestion, Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
We'll reading during the break.
Yeah.
Mr. Lee?
I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Okay, let's see here. Scanning the committee participant list. I don't see any further questions. So members, thank you very much again for a first, I guess we're about halftime in the session. And I appreciate everyone's participation this first half. And again, just to review our plan for the week we get back from Easter Passover break. We'll be hearing Representative Petersburg's finance bill first thing when we reconvene on Tuesday, April 6th. Then we'll have a walkthrough of the draft or of the omnibus bill. I say draft because we'll have amendments being entertained the following day. We will have public testimony the following day. And then the day after, we'll hear amendments. And Mr. Howe and I are discussing perhaps extra time for that amendment period so that any new ideas can be thoroughly vetted and discussed by the committee. So at this point, please keep in touch with your LA and your email, and we'll be sending out a full schedule of activities the first week we're back. And so with that, members, I want to wish everyone a very happy Easter, Passover. Ramadan is also approaching in the month of April. So to all those who celebrate those important holidays, much joy and peace and happiness, and enjoy your time here in the next week. And we'll see you again on Tuesday, April 6th. With that, members, we are adjourned.